Maybe I'll start by asking you a question today. So I'm interested in the way on retreat, for example, it seems that energy kind of gathers. And how sometimes little things can disperse that energy. So I'm curious what you've noticed. What is it that is involved in the feeling of kind of feeling, being filled with energy? That it's not the kind of energy that's coming and requiring to be thrown away immediately. So like I could feel really, really happy and I have to tell somebody, or really, really angry and I have to tell somebody or whatever. But so not that kind. But energy that may have less of a name, filling and staying. Does that make sense as a subject and a question? Like, what have you noticed, if you've noticed anything about that, that helps that? A little bit like a lake being filled by a spring.
Can say that I mostly feel it in retreats in a certain quality of the silence in the Dharma. And in this retreat you could feel the difference in the first week and then the shift in the day that people change, and until this quality of silence established itself again. So for me it's really overwhelming, the silence and the meditation.
Would you describe the quality, please?
Sometimes it feels like the silence reaches a point that there is a certain unity that synchronizes somehow, and like a certain vibe that is stable and intense.
Stable and intense? Mm-hmm. Is there any other word that comes to mind to describe? So unity, stable, intense.
Any? Something is nourishing each other. Mm-hmm. Mutual nourishing. Mm-hmm. In the silence.
Among us, or among the? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to, I said the other day that I'm trying to find out more about my experience of what I sometimes call the energy of the retreat, for not having a better phrase. And now I'm starting to feel it more like I'm calling it kind of playfully an organism. So that sense of unity and mutual nourishment. So organisms within organisms within organisms. Anyone else want to say anything about, in response to my question?
This is my first retreat, and I would say something that I feel has helped me feel unity is there being this space, but there also being so much space outside that I can explore and feel unwatched. Mm. So there's a balance. We can come together and we can. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy sometimes holding back a little bit at the end of the meditation and coming out and sort of watching everyone walking and stepping away and I feel like there's an energy every time that we step out of the hall that something's slightly changed.
Mm.
But it's in everybody.
Mm.
Or in the world, actually.
Mm.
It's being together but having this place to be.
Mm. Beautiful, and also that the part about self-consciousness, so the more easy feeling of not being watched when we're away, and then the possibility of coming into a not being watched, even when being watched. And so the being watched might be one factor of dissipating energy, burning up energy, and feeling not watched maybe is helping that. Unity, stability, mutual nourishment, going through something together that, as you beautifully said, each changed together in some way. Cool. Thank you. Anyone else?
Maybe just to say that for me it's a very difficult question because I think there's a tendency to think that everything that I can notice is something that is happening to myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's difficult, like you ask, and I'm trying to think what is the energy of the retreat, and I have no
mm-hmm.
idea. First. And then maybe, but I don't know if it's in itself or in the whole. So the first week was more of the one thing. Kind of, and then on the second week there is like more of like from a trunk that is becoming branches.
Mm-hmm.
So something more dispersed, but and sometimes it is a little bit less strong, but sometimes it also feels kind of needed and good.
Mm.
So for example, and like in continuation to what Dolores had said, sometimes now I prefer to meditate when the hall is empty, but it is still kind of filled with that
mm-hmm.
energy of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And less needing the whole group to feel like meditation.
Okay. And then the question about what you, apart from group energy, which was sort of, could be one factor, ways that we could help each other come into a way that energy is gathering. I didn't mean so much group energy yet, originally. It's not unrelated. But that if you notice in yourself, you don't have to answer out loud if you don't feel to, but the question I am really interested in today is, in each one of us, what have we noticed that is that kind of welling up of energy that's not energy that's trying to get out also, but is happy to stay and fill? What helps that happen? So what you brought up that similar issue of, and cool inspiration to meditate in the hall when no one's here as well. I love when that starts to happen on retreat, when I see shoes outside the hall and feel the freedom to meditate more than the schedule, for example, or whatever, and really in our own rhythm. So issue of space being not only because I want to not always be in the group, but to feel, to not exclude myself, to not fall into an exclusion pattern, that I could be in the hall and be connected without the physical togetherness. That's a cool one. In case, if there's anyone else that has something, you don't, it's not that, there's not a pushy thing.
I've noticed that with the group energy, there are days where I feel like I'm in sync with it, and days where I feel like I'm out of sync with it, and that because of that, that's how I feel that there's unity and support, because my job is like serving dinner, so like I see everyone come in and come up and get their plate, and there was a day I remember that I was just like, I don't know, I was beaming, like I just felt like, oh, so happy, and I was like, you know, so happy to like help everyone and wanting to give them a smile, but like some people I was just like, maybe I should maybe not be smiling at, you know, everybody, because who knows what space they're in.
Mm-hmm.
and the next day I was like in that like rah 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 rah, like, need a journal, XXX, you know, just like in that space. And I remember there was just a few people that walked by me that day that I could tell that they were like kind of in that space that I was in before, where they were also beaming that day, and I was really I felt supported that, you know, we can all kind of be in our own space but at the same time experiencing some similar energies. And I've noticed about myself personally that just through this experience, not being able to talk to people and ask like, what's your story, what's your name, what's this, what's that, that really like deep down, like I am a people observer, like I am interested in the people factor. And so okay, like it or not, or whether or not you guys all know it, like you each have a certain personality to me. And it's almost like I've come to rely on you guys to, I don't know, just certain things that I notice that are your patterns or certain things. It's like I can almost count on certain people to be a certain way, and that is stable for me in the environment where like it's sometimes in myself I'm just like this. So I feel like there's literally some people I could just walk up to and just like put my hand out and hold their hand and it would be like no big deal. And that's, you know, I know that's me creating that, but you know, that's how I'm feeling.
And it sounds like maybe even feeling that without knowing that maybe you could, even without the hand, there seems like almost that same feeling as if you did.
Can I add something?
Please.
Something else came to my mind.
Yes, please.
In Israel, in Tovana, we have sometimes retreats for only old students, people with certain experience.
Mm.
Also in Goenka tradition, they have started a Tana course for people who have done a few courses. When I try to feel the difference, so the words that come to my mind is gathered and spread. So you can really sense again, different quality in the meditation almost. Like a container that slowly getting filled, the container that small holes and it's leaking.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, that's what comes to mind.
And do you have a guess of what's containing, or what's the holes in your experience of yourself rather than anybody else? So in yourself, when you notice more love to meditate and can hardly wait to get to the hall, what do you feel if you tune into that love to meditate? Does the deep happiness fill you with energy? So one small trick to play with maybe is that I've noticed that I feel the group energy before we get together, much less figure out like where's the bathroom and how to get in and out of the hall and I better pee before this or that so that I don't, you know, all that. And sometimes there's the intensity, not the stability, but the intensity already a few days before the retreat. In people who have and haven't been on retreat before. It might be my imagination, but it seems like it happens. And so then the possibility of, in the loving to meditate, tuning through the instability with the love to meditate, no matter what, And maybe even that intensity is something we could feel containing us and moving us together towards the retreat, etc. It may be then it's less, there's a whole other dimension of retreat available. So even before, you can count fewer days. So when we have kids, we know really we count the days till we can go on retreat. So instead of it being 7 days till the retreat, maybe 3 days before, 4 days before. So instead of 7, 3 days till retreat starts while you're still at home. One of my favorite examples, sometimes the intensity seems to have a life of its own and it seems to come to a peak and then release and come to a peak and release and come to a peak. And on the peak, sometimes it'll be a night in the morning, I'll get a note that three people had anxiety attack and three people had some kind of insider breakthrough. And everybody's like, ah. Glad that's over, or wow, that's cool. Sort of, and well, simplifying kind of. So, but when that happens before we get to the retreat, there's that option of not coming to the retreat. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's my favorite example in Israel. There's someone, I didn't know her well, but she had done lots of retreats, and she was coming to the first retreat I taught in 8 years, so a couple years ago, in Endor. And she got all the way to the retreat, and she was filling out her registration form, and she was sure she had left the stove on at home, and no one else had a key to the apartment. And I forget how many hours' drive it was to go back and check. So she knew she turned it off, but she knew she left it on. So we said, yeah, okay, so you can go and check and go turn it off. Go turn it off in your mind by opening the door to your apartment and seeing that it's off, just in that 0.5% chance that it's on. So part of what I mean is that sometimes then the more experienced practitioners end up disturbing the silence with their dislike of it not yet being that stable thing that we love. I love that too. But when I have my reaction to it not being stable yet, and come on, and I don't just notice that reaction, that burning of my own energy, and how that is certainly steaming into the hall as well. Simply noticing it, we can drop into a really greater reality where we can maybe tune into intensity and stability that's more subtle, more wide, and more free to meditate deep all the way down from the first moment. And then how great when the stability is there in the room. Does that make sense? So it's just that simple thing of that simply noticing both, like how good when it's stable and intense, both. And how much my energy is burning off by not liking the non-stability. So I'm not ignoring, so someone described today feeling when there was more shifting around in the hall, someone leaving, someone moving, someone moving. And in this hall, every out-breath can be heard across the room. So not ignoring that the shiftiness can easily transfer around. Like the way any wave of force would move through a body, an organism. but really at home in my love of meditation. The heart, you said heart wish, heart desire to meditate. Like trusting that through that kind of shiftiness, like through anything. So I'm not ignoring the shiftiness. And then that helps me notice that my reaction to the shiftiness, my not liking it, thinking it shouldn't be, thinking it's not good, thinking that it's blocking stability, blocks me from feeling how I'm blocking stability. And that's what the experienced meditator has access to. Could. We can. And so keeping with that really fine line that the practice can get so, it really can expand so greatly every time. And not just honing back to that, yeah, totally wonderful, stable thing that happens. This, yum. On the retreat in Quebec last summer, when we sang the song Baba Lagumbala, that I think we sang on this retreat. So it's Baba Lagumbala, Lagumbala, Havise. And then again, and then Hey Na 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 Havise. And someone heard it as Hey Na Na Na. Na na havise. And that one person was singing that, not listening to the non-na. And so the song became a new song. It became, hey, na na na, na na havise. So the challenge of hearing the non-na when there is a na that wasn't there before, that's extra. It's fun. It's hard, but it's fun. Is there anything someone wants to say or ask? Contribute?
Yeah, it's an interesting chat.
Yeah, I'm not sure who to go for. Simultaneous. Yeah. A simultaneous spontaneity of arising.
These are good.
Go ahead.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, I was just going to say about the energy thing and how I've been feeling. For me as well, it was like the first week my energy was so contained and I felt so focused. And nothing disturbed me. Like there was the lady next. Well, anyway, there was just not like you know people snoring and stuff like that. And I would just be sitting there smiling, and nothing disturbed me whatsoever. And I just felt so focused, and I wasn't doing anything to feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just was. And then I feel like as the retreat's drawing to an end, my energy is just. I don't know what's happening to it, but it's just, yeah, dispersing and going in all different directions. And I'm feeling much more distracted by all the noises. Like in the first week, I just, it was fine. And I think I'm even making more noise, like even breathing. I'm finding myself like breathing quite loudly. And I don't know what's going on.
So, and how do you... place that next to the fact of having a deep insight today or last night or whenever that was. Just in the case something may come to mind now, it may not come to mind.
Well, maybe it was kind of like a build up to that. And then I've had this kind of realization and now it's kind of dissipating again.
Could be. I do think it probably has built up to that for sure. But I'm just curious if maybe dispersion is not only that kind of losing energy thing. If it could be like feeling a wider space that then is feels less full,
mm-hmm.
which is what I experienced on both retreats, that it was a wider space, took longer to feel, to be feelable, to be filled.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious. I'm not saying that you have to say anything more, but you can. But it comes to my mind, considering our private conversations mm-hmm. as well. It could be interesting anyway to play with relating to the sense of dispersion as maybe not a losing of something,
yeah.
but maybe part of a process that's maybe still building
mm-hmm.
in some way. Could be.
It could also just be that I'm going home next week,
yeah.
so it's mm-hmm. like, obviously I should be present here now, but it's getting closer, so
mm-hmm.
it's kind of, my energy is going in other directions
mm-hmm.
anyway.
Yeah, even so. Like the invitation of letting that still be a filling, widening process,
mm-hmm.
like very naturally then, how beautiful in case the path widens big enough to stay present with naturally thoughts going to 2 weeks from now,
mm-hmm.
imagining, fearing, planning, noticing that. But sometimes that little click of maybe I haven't just lost it and never mind because I'm going home anyway and all is lost, but maybe on a more subtle level there's could be a widening to have enough room for all those outer shifts while still digesting all the inner. But so anyway, we don't have to say we know what's happening, but we can, it is, I find so helpful to notice my attitude towards it affects it.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly affects my relationship, my experience of it. Sometimes a good process that I judge as not good manages to stay wholesome until I realize, oh, right, I just thought that was wrong. And it was actually, thank goodness. So, Kailash, do you?
Mm. Yeah, it's very interesting how we pick up on group energy. And just to say, it's the latest research in psychology that talks about something called the mirror neurons, that well, everybody has it. And basically, it kind of describes everybody's ability to, for example, how if I were to step into a room where there's a group of people there and somehow they just got the news that somebody had died. And the moment I step in, you know, somehow the mirror neurons will,
mm.
oh, somehow, yeah,
mm.
I get that. No, they didn't.
Mm.
Did someone just die?
Mm.
And so, since we all have that,
mm.
Every retreat has a different group energy anyway.
Mm.
So everybody's mirror neurons kind of trying to feeling out everybody else's energies and at the same time kind of co-creating, you know, a group energy for this new 7-day retreat here.
Mm.
So it's a very dynamic process that's happening. And like for example, last year, as you know, the retreat, when they were just by some strange quirk of fate, there were so many of us here that were like, you know, been part of the Open Dharma furniture for so many years. And it felt more like a family reunion than a retreat.
Mm.
There was an immediate kind of a coherence
mm.
and unity to the retreat. You know, right off the bat, really, you know, without even this need to take a few days to settle into it and to, you know, co-create this group energy,
mm.
it was there right from the start.
Mm.
And I was told as well that, you know, even some people who were new to the retreat last year, for example,
yeah.
immediately picked that up. This sense of, you know, that there was a unity there to the retreat because of these mirror neurons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to say so that we don't get into a certain idea about things. That dropping suddenly into deep silence has happened with like all new people sometimes as well. So not like if you haven't done 20 retreats, you know, don't bother calling us, we'll call you.
Yeah, it's not a value judgment.
Yes. No, but even that the same thing has happened, not because there was the coincidence of lots of people with lots of retreat experience, the same thing, and etc. So it's not always this sort of A leads to B sort of thing. And it never seems to be this A leads to B. So I'd just like to ask us to honestly notice where, how, when the gathering of energy happens. In simple ways and in your own personal ways. Simple ways like resting. Sometimes there's a sense of resting when we sleep and we wake up full of energy, and sometimes we sleep and we're not rested. We might start to just be open to feel more accurately what all is happening. And I think the main thing is the non-judgmental part, just being in touch with the how it feels, the direct experience. And for people with more retreat experience, there's that danger of thinking, I do or I should. No. And I shouldn't be having a reaction, so I'm not. Or this reaction of preferring this or that is correct, is dharmic or something. And it's in our own experience, what's actually happening? Is the energy getting burned off? Is the energy getting rested up? One thing that I've noticed is just even one moment of this practice that we keep talking about of resting and opening to what is, in the most simple way, in the most deep way, in any way, like resting back and receiving the sensation of the foot, like we said yesterday. How that is, and how it is when I'm working with my image and memory and idea of the foot. And how one, in my experience, not only is there a gradual welling up of energy, there's a whole field of energy immediately available when I'm just like as if resting back, the crescent moon receiving the experience of the foot, that the experience called foot, it's not even a foot anymore. And the possibility that our habit energies of not being present burns up our energy, leaks the energy, whatever. And so any example, the example of not quite being present on the retreat because it hasn't yet settled into that retreat mode, not to hammer that point, but it's just easy because we've already talked about it. Go ahead. No, that's right.
I was saying about the how wonderful it is to see new people coming into the retreat.
Yeah.
And what I found is both friends who I've known for a long time who have kind of encouraged to come to the retreat, but also perfect strangers.
Yeah.
Just that excitement and also the worry in a very strange kind of way,
mm-hmm.
of like days when people are not, you know, coming for meditation or like.
Yes.
You know? So yeah, I think that really adds to my experience.
Mm. Cool. Beautiful.
Hmm. I think you just sparked my voice. I was thinking as you were talking that for me part of the build of energy is the increase in trust as
mm-hmm.
the days go by, and for me that has nothing at all to do with who is experienced and who is not.
Yeah.
It's like you come together on day one, and as the days go by, it's like...
Yeah.
There becomes more space to just be yourself when you'll do something tiny, and then there is nothing or no one to judge. And then that's like you've crossed a line, and then a bit more energy is released.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it quite beautiful when I retreat as the days go by, slowly, slowly, you see people do things that they weren't doing on day one.
Mm-hmm.
Like stroking a tree or, you know, it's like,
yeah.
As the trust comes that you can just be yourself,
yeah.
Then
mm.
This energy of,
yeah.
Everybody's so real,
yeah.
And that builds and builds and builds.
Mm. Cool. Could you hear? Yeah. Yes, great. So I think you've nailed the basic, most helpful quality is trust, except the problem is we can't just make it. But sometimes it seems to happen. Yeah. And it seems like when there's a little bit of trust, as you said, people feel a little, they can dare a little bit more, that they could just be themselves here. And there's that little more towards being wholly here, whether I like it or don't like it, etc. And then, wow, we could start to feel that that can be part of this mutual nourishment together and with our own space. And then a little bit more of what we could call trust. So then a little bit more towards 100% giving ourselves to our practice, our life, whatever. This morning in the movement, I asked people to feel for this idea of authentic movement, not being about so much me being myself as I know myself, but experiencing that sort of wider life and letting that have you, letting that have your body and your mind and how it expresses. So authentic to the wider life. These different steps of trusting enough to give a little more fully, to be a little more fully in touch with our experience. It's an inner trust with myself, and also it has to do also with outer. To be careful with the word trust, where it starts to become, I expect you to always give me the signals that make my alarm system go down so that I feel relaxed. And trust can include where there could be some friction, that it's not a demand or an expectation. So the possibility that what's natural is being wholly here, present, so to say, in the common word. And that our habit of going away, of shutting down, of ignoring part or more, part or parts, or nearly all of actually what is our experience, of what is. So the direct experience being with what is, opening to receive what is, whatever way you want to put it, in your own words. We could so easily think that it's always only being with what's most noticeable. So we feel really angry, oh, be with what is means be with the anger. That's not all that there is. And if we have the idea that being with what is directly is only being with what's easily noticeable, which means only being in touch with the habit energy, then most easily the habit energy will kind of take us rather than that presence, that slippery presence or willingness to be wholly here. Does that make sense? And so the possibility that the effort and the draining and burning of our energy is the going away from being holy here, is the closing down, is the spacing out. And so I love this morning someone mentioned to me in her experience in the movement, my question about authenticity, and it's someone happens to be on a first retreat, saying that she realized that possibility of being authentic to a wider life made her realize that all of her thinking, that her thoughts are borrowed, she said. And then she said, oh, and my body also, that's borrowed. The body's also borrowed. So this is like a sutta. This is a sutra. It is in a text, but this was a discovery. The thoughts are borrowed, the body is borrowed. So then I want to find out what else, what is there, what am I, what is this?
Who's borrowing?
Sorry? And who's borrowing, yeah. So the possibility of that presence without borders, so we might be wholly in a really specific experience. We might fully feel that closing down or that disliking or that liking, that direction that's trying to take over. And sometimes by just honestly noticing that, it drops. And that's another way the energy comes back. And if we can allow it, it's partly a trust thing, but it's so through experiencing, then there's less and less uptightness about we notice that, wow, when there isn't effort, there is presence. When there isn't energy getting burned off, there's here, there's wholeness, there's 100%-ness. And that already in itself solved our problems in a way. So I might still have things I've got to deal with, but the problematicness of it is gone.
Can I say something?
Yeah, of course.
I'm not sure I should even speak because I'm burning out so much energy. my personal experience has been so much back and forth, like in a spiral kind of, but it's been really distinct that there are this time of sweetness in meditation and the energy of talking about and all this, and then it kind of builds up and then there is a burst of something.
Yeah.
And actually the first thing that happened was a burst. It wasn't like I was not really here, and then I made myself angry about something stupid, just in an almost artificial way, and then I could come. And like I have, like, I don't know how many circles.
Yeah.
So at some point, so at the first one I was hoping, okay, now I'm in the retreat, and then at some point I realized it's not gonna stop. And this is like being in the retreat. But also that the thing that helps me back, like from these outbursts kind of, it usually involves in some way, well, so it feels as if like there's this this part that is sweet and meditating and whatever, and then like the mind and emotions get anxious that they might be left behind, you know, without their mommy kind of, or killed, like you said yesterday, and they kind of panic. And then, like, maybe I'm losing the chance to actually run away and leave them behind, but what I do is, at some point, I manage to, like, group everybody together and say, you know, I love you too, kind of.
Yeah.
And, okay, so gathering together again, and then, like, the sweetness and meditative part can go again, and then they join again. So
yeah.
This kind of...
Yeah.
So it really involves just helping them meet.
Mm-hmm. Not leaving anything out.
Yeah, but also making them feel really wanted.
Yeah, yeah. So can I tell a story? Some of you, I hope, have heard me tell this story before because it's such a great story. So there was a school, and there was a boy, and he was a bad boy, so to say. He hurt people. And he was disobedient and disrespectful and wild. People didn't feel safe around him. Teachers, students, etc. And so finally, it came to that point. Something must be done. It built to that point. Something must be done. And luckily, there was one of the main teachers or directors of the school had some sense in her. And so she said, okay, something must be done. Let's do this thing. And so the thing wasn't kicking him out of school. The thing was calling everybody together in one room, including the boy, including the students, including the teachers. And each person, one by one, went to the boy, looked him in the eye, he looked them in the eye, and the person said to him, "You belong." Then the next person came, "You belong." And this is not just a treatment on the boy. This is a treatment on the system that has affected this boy this way, that's asking him to be the bad boy. So it's the treatment of the whole system of the school, the organism of the school. You belong. You belong. And then it's sort of, it helped. He wasn't a bad boy. It's a true story.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
That I felt something similar, and I feel that that's important because I feel like the retreats for me run the danger of being like bubbles, like this kind of magic land that I enter, and then when I go back home, like things are mostly like they were before.
Mm.
And that's my greatest sort of fear.
Yeah.
And I think on this retreat, I don't know if it's happened deliberately or what, but I found elements of my other life coming in here. And I'm kind of hoping that when I go back, it'll be better in terms of, yeah, bringing the different sort of kids together.
Probably your practice is grown wider, and so there's more chance to let it all belong. And at first, there may need to be some pushing against this so that I can feel what is a thought, what is a sensation, etc. What is silence? What do I want? What do I love? What is it to trust at all? What is that moment of wholehearted, like whole, 100% in, no matter what, not to get something? And then it can start to, we have access to what embraces it all. And then, okay, so if we can use the Jacques Lucerne idea of hope, that the hope, when it's like hope, fear, hope, is going to self-sabotage. But the hope, when it's like public opinion, is that there's no chance for any change. It's going to be bad, and it's going to, if anything, get worse. Forever. That just opening the possibilities. And it seems to me that's something that really takes a while to get the hang of. It's a little bit like, so the practice of opening and what's arising. So I hope it's clear that the direct contact with reality means, okay, so thoughts are there, direct contact with that, that's all. We're not trying to pretend there's not those thoughts. There they are. And that's not all. Yeah? That's clear, right? Okay. So as with the practice of resting into contact with what is, and noticing the difference of when I'm making it up in order to hold on to something without much interest in actually what is real, there starts to be a movability. I guess we could say we start to feel that it's not all programming. It's not all programmed. So from yesterday, the Dhammadinna teaching of that happiness that comes when we rest into what is, and there's some at least whisper of okayness. So let there be thoughts, there's still okayness. The thoughts don't take away the okayness. Sometimes the fear covers my ability to feel the okayness or enoughness. So, and when there's a sense of enoughness, or just simply like 100%, like call everybody together, we're not leaving anybody out. Somehow a sense of 100%. So when we start to feel that rebel thing happening, then what are we leaving out? And let's find a way, if it's through bursting or if it's through just, oh, I don't have to leave that out. Let's include that. You can call that kindness or honesty, whatever you want. That more towards wholeness, completeness, more towards completeness, more towards 100%-ness. So I'm not trying to be loyal to how I think it should be. I'm just loyal to what it is in my own experience, that kind of wholeness. From that, energy comes that tends to be a bit happy, a bit filled. And it tends to do the cleaning for us. Whatever cleaning needs to happen, it does a cleaning. It either is or is related to this experience, the first jhana, which is in the story of the Buddha that I keep talking about, where he realizes what his path is after trying all those other people's paths. And he gets back in touch with what is, and he finds what is the way that he could wholeheartedly follow, literally follow the way. Like, so we talk about following the way, and it's as if a kind of fixed phrase, but it is following that way that's emerging. We become the follower rather than driving it. Happiness and rapture born of seclusion. Seclusion means that feeling of completeness, that experience of completeness, but it means including it all. It's not just like, I feel complete, and I don't want to look over there where I feel sad or angry or complete. So that's why it seems sometimes the word okayness is good enough, works well. The metaphor for that first jhana, the metaphor for this kind of area that we're talking about, whether we're technically in the first jhana or not, the metaphor is mixing soap flakes with water, and it's about cleaning. It's a metaphor of cleaning. And mixing that cleaning powder, mixing water into the dry flakes, massaging it in all the way through until it's completely full of water that's not dripping, but you couldn't put any more water in. It's such a cool metaphor. So it's filling and cleaning. And that's just invited by our own either direct experience. So whatever it is, I trust that by being in touch with it, whatever is extra or untrue can fall apart. I don't have to get rid of it. I don't have to make it. It's extra, it can fall. So even if we don't feel happy, there's something in the system that feels good with it, that we're willing to go with it all the way. It might not feel always so joyful, but in the system, we could almost call it joy. There's a yes. There's not like yes, but it's like yes, okay, yeah. That fits. So the enoughness brings some kind of happiness or yesness. That's where Dhammadinna was saying this one kind of pleasure that isn't a trap, that isn't programmed. it's this completeness. We feel happy when everybody belongs. Doesn't mean we like everybody or that they're behaving well, etc., but we let it all belong and respond from there. That maybe puts us in touch with a natural happiness comes in and through everywhere. And it cleans out whatever needs cleaning out. And then the longing, that knowing of what is needed, knowing of what deeply we want, starts to bring a direction to. So much like the riverbed that Tracy G talked about, that she felt such a union with that, the riverbed there, dry at the bottom of the valley, concave, lying into the ground, thirsting and quenching. So I think as we start to get into how good it is to be wholehearted or to be in that good enough, enoughness, okayness, everybody belongs, at least in here it is, that honesty. And that with the honesty there is, so that interest of, okay, wow, the thinking is borrowed, the body is borrowed, what else is there? There's a natural turning. And this is where that question the other day of concentration, investigation, what's the right recipe? In that feeling of enoughness, completeness, honesty, or whatever word you like, where we fill with energy, we feel maybe happy, we feel a yes. And we also feel willing to be moved, that we're not just trying to stay true to what already we were, but we're willingly moved, willingly turned. That's the concentration investigation at once, 100% of both. And it seems to me that being in that kind of space, two things might be helpful. So filled, full, a sense of it's all here, and it doesn't have to stay here. It can be moved, it can be turned completely inside out. Non-loyalty to what was. So here, so present. There's much less interest in that whole thing about judgment. That does usually burn up so much of our energy, first of all. So then we can just simply notice directly how the mind pictures so-and-so and feels that as if that person judging me, caging me, or whatever, realizing that's the movement of one's own mind, and just knowing that shape and that quality directly, just knowing it directly. Boom. And then probably they're not judging you, but even if they were, what do they know? Really, what do they know? And who gives that authority? It seems to me that when we're full and yet not stuck somewhere, full and movable, willing, full and blown away, whatever I thought I had to hold on to is up for questioning. that fact of all this mutual influence, the interconnectedness, interdependence, co-arising, that we ended up talking about, that wasn't what I was asking, but we ended up talking about, which is an example of itself. It seems to me that as we feel more okay with the wholeness, the happiness that is, and how movable we are. So we're happy, but it's not like that kind of satisfaction that I'm going to stay here, my shell. It's, we realize there's no shell and willingness to be moved. That the interconnectedness, that fact of mutual influence, that fact of the wider being. So in the poem yesterday, the rise of rain, the shift of the wind, the drop of a red star on a far water rim, something like that. An endless catalog of shouts, laughters, and silent contemplations. They made you from day to day for joy, child. That wider organism that can work in a way that's, they call transcendent. So instead of weighing us down, burdening, draining energy, it can lift up towards greater energy field, more kindness, clarity, insight, more belonging. We discover another one that we had not realized we left out, belonging. And in this, maybe one of the more important practices is that practice of feeling no thing. So hearing that there wasn't a na, a third na, or a fourth or a fifth. Feeling that those assumptions that I was living by aren't, or that projection that I was assuming isn't. I thought you were judging me. And actually, whether you are or not, what I'm experiencing is a movement of my own mind. Boom. Please.
Yesterday evening, I was walking and had a huge sense of connection with everything. And I realized, and I think it's kind of connected to what you're saying.
Yeah.
It was after the teaching as well yesterday, and talking about trust from just allowing. And it came to me that since we're small, we're taught language, obviously, and language labels everything. And so once you learn the name of something, that's it, you know what that is.
Mm.
And yesterday I had this huge sense, and today it's continuing, of unlearning all that.
Mm.
And actually, okay, I know the name of it, but actually I don't know what it is at all.
Yeah.
And just trusting that and feeling, instead of the label on it and the distance between me and that, that's gone, that distance, and who knows what it is, but
yes,
there it is, and there I am as part of it.
Yes.
And it was really, it's beautiful. It is beautiful.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Thank you. Is there any word that comes to mind for that? The feeling of it, the texture of it, in your experience.
Very spacious. It's exhilarating. It makes everything open here.
Mm.
It's warm and comforting at the same time.
Mm.
Yeah. Big but comforting.
Yeah.
A similar experience a while ago too, about learning the idea that language is learned, but that is how we connect to things in our life until we unlearn that. And I think the word that came up for me was permeable.
Mm-hmm.
After realizing that, like, what you call thumb and what I call thumb, or like what you call love and what I call love, like any word,
mm-hmm.
we relate to it differently, therefore it doesn't really exist.
Mm.
And it just is. And yeah, I just, it makes me, like, the image that I get in my head almost is that there's nothing on the inside of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we can, like, really just move into and beyond and through
mm-hmm.
it, like, permeable.
Yeah, cool. So the permeable is what I was saying. It sounds similar to what I'm calling that interdependence or the wider
yeah.
being. It's one aspect of that. And also your beautiful description of your that experience does go very much with what I'm saying, so that's cool to hear. So that the that not only being aware of the no thing, being aware of not only what's easy to feel, not only what first comes to mind, what I think it is, what I've experienced in the past, but whatever that is, it's the non-thingness of it. And feeling that that experience of non-thing has a spaciousness and a closeness or presence or comfortingness. And so sometimes we could say let that no-thingness, so not only relating to things and how they influence each other, clunk, 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 but also the no-thingness of the experience, which is less easy to tune into. It's not the first thing we notice, but tuning into the no-thingness and letting that support, letting that love you. It, leaning into the no-thingness is like, that's what your experience sounds like.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
There's a really key word as part of this experience, but it's the word surrender.
Mm.
Yeah. It was after talking about the kitten.
Yeah.
And stop trying to control everything with the small mind.
Yeah.
We think we can put things in compartments and make that happen that way, and we're not
yeah.
way. No, just trust that it will go the way it should.
Mm.
And in my head I had the sentence surrender to the immensity that is.
Mm.
And I was outside and it's immense.
Mm.
And there was me surrendering to it.
Mm.
Yeah. So that was really important.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. Great. So it's a perfect example of what I was
okay.
trying to bring into the hall. So thank you for bringing it into the hall that way. So the experiments of trusting no thing, so just surrendering to the immensity is another way, trusting no thing and finding that something comes up that might be this way of emergence. Of our path. That's not confining us, but so there's spaciousness and there is some kind of closeness. And so maybe I'll just end with some lines from Almas. He talks about to align with the truth. So it's like, again, the being direct contact with whatever is our direct experience and noticing what the idea is in there. What's the direct experience of the idea? He starts with an assumption of something that we can't assume. He says, when the confidence is there. So the confidence that, for example, our path can emerge as we are the kitten, as we rest back and let something well up, that might be good, that the organism might just know what to do, or in the language of Dogen that I think I read the first night of this retreat last week, 5 days ago, that wandering around in our head, we may miss the vital path, so that wholehearted path, of letting your body leap. So when the confidence is there, that often isn't there. But so we could say literally when, so it's not always there, when the confidence is there, your awareness of exactly what is happening in you will allow you to see that your organism will do the best it can in the situation. This is another really weird coincidence that I hadn't read this book before, and the word organism was coming all the time, especially this second week. And then I opened the book to this guy talking about the organism. Dogen's body leap. The organism will do the best it can in the situation. So maybe the organism, maybe the body can leap in Dogen's language. Maybe the organism will do the best it can in the situation. Maybe the body sees the car turning in front of us before we walk into it with our agenda. Your mind, however, doesn't allow that complete presence in the now. It thinks it knows what is best for you, but of course it knows only what has happened in the past. So the mind only knows, let's say, for example, the language of trees, and that's like with Jacques saying, with eyes, we go by so quickly without really actually being present with it or being that spacious intimacy with what is. So the mind, of course, only knows what has happened in the past. Because you don't know that you have an innate intelligence that knows what needs to be done, you don't allow it to operate. Getting in touch with what's happening is in itself a discharge, a regulation. And now he is making a statement we may or may not agree. Discontent, pain, and conflict are not part of our natural state. When you see and release what is false, it goes away. When you're not needing to fill holes, your life will be an expression of satisfaction. So just a possibility that goes against, I think, our worldview, but the possibility that feeling into a deep okayness, feeling into a, if it's not a trust of what is, it could be, why would I do anything other than be with my actual experience? So it doesn't have to be trusting what is or trusting my true nature or something that may not be real, but just being in touch with our actual experience. Not only, though, what's so easy to notice, also what isn't easy to notice, including nothing. Nothing. That maybe that wholeheartedness, wholeness, completeness, giving up of agenda, that in itself has a kind of happiness, so deep okayness in the words of John de Ruyter, or enoughness. Or why would I do anything? Why would I go away from what is? That can allow things to fall into place, that can allow an intelligence that I didn't know was there to happen, and that's hard to recognize also. It's only usually afterwards that we, wow, that was smart. But instead of being occupied with filling the places of nothing, of space, of what seems like I'm going to fall forever and never land, instead of trying to fill that up, being with that directly, it may bring about a really different starting place, a really different way of moving that we can happily go with even when it goes on quite a treacherous path. Are there any questions or anything you would like to say briefly? Thank you for your presence, warm and spacious in our organism. May our practice and lives be dedicated wholly, with great satisfaction, to risking everything, jumping into the momentum towards awakening for all, including ourselves.